He leaned across and clasped my shoulder with a grip that made me wince. "You have done enough here, old friend. I could never have accomplished so much without you. If you had not come to find me, I might still be sodden with drink and lying in the embrace of some stinking whore. I owe you more than I can ever repay, but I must send you away now. You are needed elsewhere. Busty is my meat, and I don't need you to share the feast with me. You will not be coming with me to Jebel Bahari. I am sending you back where you belong, where I also belong, but where I cannot be, at the side of the Lady Lostris. I envy you, old friend. I would give up my hope of immortality to be going to her in your place." I protested most prettily, of course. I swore that all I wanted was another chance at those villains, and that I was his companion, and that I would be seriously aggrieved if he would not give me a place at his side in the next campaign. All the time I was secure in the knowledge that when Thanos set his mind on a course of action, he was adamant and could not easily be dissuaded, except very occasionally by his friend and adviser, Taita the Slave. The truth was that I had enjoyed my fill of wild heroics and people trying to kill me. I was not by nature a soldier, not some insensitive clod of a trooper. I hated the rigours of campaigning in the desert. I could not bear another week of heat and sweat and flies without even a glimpse of the sweet green waters of Mother Nile. I longed for the feel of clean linen against my freshly bathed and anointed skin. I missed my mistress more than I could express in mere words. Our quiet, civilized life in the painted rooms on the island of Elephantine, our music, and long, leisurely conversations together, my pets and my scrolls, all these exerted an irresistible draw upon me. Thanos was right. He no longer needed me, and my place was with my mistress. However, to acquiesce too readily to his orders might lower his opinion of me, and I did not want that either. At last I allowed him to convince me, and concealing my eagerness, I began my preparations for my return to Elephantine. Thanos had ordered Kratos back to Karnak to assemble and bring up reinforcements for the expedition into the desert of Jebel Bahari. I was to travel under his protection as far as Karnak, but taking leave of Thanos was not a simple matter. Twice when I had already left the house of Tiamat to join Kratos, where he waited for me on the outskirts of the town, Thanos called me back to give me another message to take to my mistress. "Tell her that I think of her every hour of every day." "You've already given me that message," I protested. "Tell her that my dreams are filled with images of her lovely face." "And that one also. I can recite them by heart. Give me something new," I pleaded. "Tell her that I believe the vision of the mazes, that in a few short years we will be together. Kratos is waiting for me. If you keep me here, how can I deliver your message? Tell her that everything I do is for her. Every breath I draw is for her." He broke off and embraced me. "The truth is, Taita, I doubt I can live another day without her." 5 years will pass like that single day. When next you meet her, your honour will be restored and you will once more stand high in the land. She can only love you the more for that. He released me. "Take good care of her until I am able to assume that joyous duty from you. Now away with you. Speed to her side." "That has been my intention this hour past," I told him wryly, and made good my escape. With Kratos at the head of our small detachment, we made the journey to Karnak in under a week. Fearful of discovery by Rasfa or Lord Intef, I spent as little time in my beloved city as it took me to find passage on one of the barges heading southwards. I left Kratos busily recruiting from amongst the elite regiments of Pharaoh's guards, the 1,000 good men that Thanos had demanded, and I went aboard the barge. We had the north wind in our sails all the way, and we tied up at the wharf of East Elephantine, 12 days after leaving Thebes. I was still dressed in the wig and garb of the priesthood, and nobody recognized me as I came ashore. For the price of a small copper ring, I hired a felucca to take me across the river to the Royal Island, and it put me down at the steps that led up to the water gate to our garden in the harem. My heart pounded against my ribs as I bounded up the stairs. I had been away from my mistress far too long. It was at times such as these that I realized the full strength of my feelings for her. I was certain that Thanos' love was but a light river breeze in comparison to the Khamzin of my own emotions. One of Lostris' Kushite maidens met me at the gate and tried to prevent me from entering. "My mistress is unwell, priest. There is another doctor with her at this moment. She will not see you." "She will see me," I told her, and stripped off my wig. "Taita," She squealed and fell to her knees, frantically making the sign to ward off evil. You are dead! This is not you, but some evil apparition from beyond the grave. I brushed her aside and hurried to my mistress's private quarters, to be met at the doors by one of those priests of Osiris who consider themselves physicians. What are you doing here? I demanded of him, appalled that one of these quacks had been anywhere near my mistress. Before he could answer, I bellowed at him, Out! Get out of here! Take your spells and charms and filthy potions, and don't come back! He looked as though he was prepared to argue, but I placed my hand between his shoulder blades and gave him a running start towards the gate. Then I rushed to my mistress's bedside. The odour of sickness filled the chamber, sour and strong, and a wild grief seized me as I looked down at the Lady Lostries. She seemed to have shrunk in size, and her skin was pale as the ashes of an old campfire. She was asleep, or in a coma, I could not be certain which, but there were dark bruised shadows beneath her closed eyelids. Her lips had that dry and crusty look that filled me with dread. I drew back the linen sheet that covered her, and beneath it she was naked. I stared in horror at her body. The flesh had melted off her. Her limbs were thin as sticks, and her ribs and the bones of her pelvis stuck out through the unhealthy skin like those of drought-stricken kine. Tenderly I placed my hand in her armpit to feel for the heat of fever, but her skin was cool. What kind of disease was this, I fretted. I had not encountered any like it before. Without leaving her side, I yelled for her slave girls, but none of them had the courage to face the ghost of Taita. In the end, I had to storm into their quarters and drag one of them whimpering from under her bed. What have you done to your mistress to bring her to this pass? I kicked her fat backside to focus her attention on my question, and she whined and covered her face so as not to have to look upon me. She will not eat. Barely a mouthful in all these weeks. Not since the mummy of Tanus, Lord Harab, was laid in his tomb in the Valley of the Nobles. She has even lost the child of Pharaoh that she was carrying in her womb. Spare me, kind ghost. I have done you no harm. I stared down at her in bewilderment for a moment, until I realized what had happened. My message of comfort to the Lady Lostries had never been delivered. Intuitively, I guessed that the messenger from Kratos, dispatched from Luxor to carry my letter to my mistress, had never reached Elephantine. He had probably become one more victim of the shrikes, just another corpse floating down the river with an empty purse and a gaping wound in his throat. I hoped that my letter had fallen into the hands of some illiterate thief and not been taken to Akseth. There was no time to worry about that now. I rushed back to my mistress's side and fell on my knees beside her bed. My darling, I whispered, and stroked her haggard brow. It is me, Taita, your slave. She stirred slightly and mumbled something I could not catch. I realized that there was little time to spare. She was far gone. It was over a month since Tanus' purported death. If the slave girl had spoken the truth, and she had indeed taken no food in all that time, then it was a wonder that she was still alive. I leapt up again and ran to my own rooms. Despite my demise, nothing had been changed, and my medicine chest was in the alcove where I had left it. With it in my arms, I hurried back to my mistress. My hands were shaking as I lit a twig of the scorpion bush from the flame of the oil lamp beside her bed, and held the glowing end under her nose. Almost immediately she gasped and sneezed and struggled to avoid the pungent smoke. "Mistress, it is I, Taita. Speak to me." She opened her eyes, and I saw the dawn of pleasure in them swiftly extinguished by the fresh realization of her bereavement. She held out her thin, pale arms to me, and I took her to my breast. "Taita," she sobbed softly. "He is dead. Tanus is dead. I cannot live without him." "No, no, no, he is alive. I came directly from him with messages of love and devotion from him to you." "You are cruel to mock me so. I know he is dead. His tomb is sealed." "It was a subterfuge to mislead his enemies," I cried. "Tanus lives, I swear it to you. He loves you, he waits for you." "Oh, that I could believe you. But I know you so well, you will lie to protect me. How can you torment me with false promises? I hate you so." She tried to break from my arms. "I swear it. Tanus is alive." "Swear on the honour of the mother you never knew. Swear on the wrath of all the gods." She hardly had the strength to challenge me. On all these I swear, and on my love and duty to you, my mistress. Can it be? I saw the strength of hope flow back into her, and a faint flush of colour bloom in her cheeks. Oh, Taita, can it truly be? Would I look so joyful if it were not? You know I love him almost as much as you do. Could I smile thus if Tunnus were truly dead? While she stared into my eyes, I launched into a recitation of all that had occurred since I had left her side so many weeks ago. I excluded only the details of the condition in which I had discovered Tunnus in the old shack in the swamps, and the female company I had found him keeping. She said not a word, but her eyes never left my face as she devoured my words. Her pale face, almost translucent with starvation, glowed like a pearl as she listened to my account of our adventures at Galala, of how Tunnus led the fighting like a god, and of how he sang with the wild joy of battle. "And so you see, it is true. Tunnus is alive," I ended, and she spoke for the first time since I had begun. "If he is alive, then bring him to me. I will not eat a mouthful until I set my eyes upon his face once more." "I will bring him to your side as swiftly as I can send a messenger to him, if that is what you wish," I promised, and reached for the polished bronze mirror from my chest. I held the mirror before her eyes and asked softly, "Do you want him to see you as you are now?" She stared at her own gaunt, hollow-eyed image. "I will send for him today, if you order it. He could be here within a week, if you really want that." I watched her struggle with her emotions. "I am ugly," she whispered. "I look like an old woman." "Your beauty is still there, just below the surface. I cannot let Tunnus see me like this." Feminine vanity had triumphed over all her other emotions. "Then you must eat." "You promise," she wavered, "you promise that he is still alive, and that you will bring him to me as soon as I am well again. Place your hand on my heart and swear it to me." I could feel her every rib and her heart fluttering like a trapped bird beneath my fingers. "I promise," I said. "I will trust you this time. But if you are lying, I will never trust you again. Bring me food." As I hurried to the kitchen, I could not help but feel smug. Taita the crafty had got his own way yet again. I mixed a bowl of warm milk and honey. We would have to begin slowly, for she had driven herself to the very edge of starvation. She vomited up the contents of the first bowl, but was able to keep down the second. If I had delayed my return by another day, it might have been too late. Spread by the chattering slave girls, the news of my miraculous return from the grave swept through the island like the smallpox. Before nightfall, Pharaoh sent Aten to fetch me to an audience. Even my old friend Aten was strained and reserved in my presence. He leapt away nimbly when I tried to touch him, as though my hand might pass through his flesh like a puff of smoke. As he led me through the palace, slaves and nobles alike scurried out of my path, and inquisitive faces watched me from every window and dark corner as we passed. Pharaoh greeted me with a curious mixture of respect and nervousness, most alien to a king and a god. "Where have you been, Taita?" he asked, as though he did not really want to hear the answer. I prostrated myself at his feet. "Divine Pharaoh, as you yourself are part of the godhead, I understand that you ask that question to test me. You know that my lips are sealed. It would be sacrilege for me to speak of these mysteries even to you. Please convey to the other deities who are your peers, and particularly to Anubis, the god of the cemeteries, that I have been true to the charge laid upon me, that I have kept the oath of silence imposed upon me. Tell them that I have passed the test that you sent me." His expression glazed as he considered this, and he fidgeted nervously. I could see him forming question after question and then discarding each of them in turn. I had left him no opening to exploit. In the end, he blurted out lamely, "Indeed, Taita, you have passed the test I set you. Welcome back. You have been missed." But I could see that all his suspicions were confirmed, and he treated me with that respect due to one who had solved the ultimate mystery. I crawled closer to him and dropped my voice to a whisper. "Great Egypt, you know the reason I have been sent back." He looked mystified, but nodded uncertainly. I came to my feet and glanced around suspiciously, as though I expected to be overlooked by supernatural forces. I made the sign against evil before I went on. the Lady Lostris. Her illness was caused by the direct influence of... I could not say the name, but made the horn sign with two fingers, the sign of the dark god Seth. His expression changed from confusion to dread, and he shivered involuntarily and drew closer to me, as if for protection, as I went on. Before I was taken away, my mistress was already carrying in her womb the treasure of the House of Mamoza when the Dark One intervened. Due to her illness, the son she was bearing you has been aborted from her womb. Pharaoh looked distraught. So that is the reason that she miscarried, he began, and then broke off. I picked up my cue smoothly. Never fear, Great Egypt. I have been sent back by forces greater than those of the Dark One to save her, so that the destiny that I foresaw in the mazes of Amon-Ra may run its allotted course. There will be another son to replace the one that was lost. Your dynasty will still be secured. You must not leave the side of the Lady Lostris until she is well again. His voice shook with emotion. If you save her and she bears me another son, you may ask from me whatever you wish. But if she dies... He stopped as he considered what threat might impress one who had already returned from beyond, and in the end let it trail away. With your permission, Your Majesty, I shall go to her this instant. This instant, he agreed. Go, go.